Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 459. Science Faction, I call BS.
All right, Coach, meeting you here to train again to take down Dr. Troy. Why do you got this chicken in here, and why can't I wear pants?
This is going to be a different kind of cockfight, absolutely.
Oh, no. Why does it have metal on its beak?
And its cock. And speaking of metal on its cock, I, of course, am your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy. With me, as always, is my comedian, Mr. Damian Mercado. Damian, how are you doing this afternoon?
Doing great. Can I at least get some metal for my cloaca?
All out of cloaca metal, but we do have something that has spikes pointed inside.
Yeah, I am from Finland, and I was the first person to start playing cloaca metal, cloaca death metal. It was metal meant to make fish want to bang.
But unfortunately, it made many fish sad and suicidal.
I'm picturing like a Norwegian salmon farm with a dude with black hair, dressed in all black, with a guitar just shredding out on an ice field, kicking his hair around.
The fish are happy.
And speaking of happy fish, this is, of course, our game of I Call BS, a game where I read four science news articles, some of which are real, some of which are BS, sitting for bad science. Normally, our comedian, Mr. Damian Mercado, competes against our guest scientists to see who can decide which ones are real or which ones are fake.
In the before However, time that happened.
Yes, in the before corona time. However, because of the coronavirus, we are no longer having our guest scientists in studio. We will hopefully have them as a kind of teleconference the way Damian and I are doing this podcast. We will hopefully have them back sometime in the next 6 weeks or so. And then eventually when all this boils over, we will have them back in studio. But for now, Damian has to, as he said, hone his chops against the game to try and stay somewhat, I don't want to say good, to try and stay at the same level of disappointing he's at without reverting to a lower level of disappointing.
I have been kicking ass. You have been ignoring the results as per usual. See, I'm starting to doubt your motives for being my coach. I think you're feeding me wrong answers. And I don't see why we have to play strip I call BS where I get everyone wrong and I'm not playing against anybody. It's just me getting naked in front of a Zoom camera for you. Why am I putting this together now?
It's actually a modified version of strip I call BS, where I just have you strip the paint off a bunch of furniture that I'm refurbishing.
Oh, you got it. It looks like you got to do my Lazy Susan.
You're like, but the chemicals are not good for me, and I don't have a respirator. This is just really time-consuming and hard on my body.
Yeah, well, Damian, I'm sorry. I wish you could get some ventilation, but it messes with the sound on the recording, so keep stripping.
All right, let's move right on to I call BS.
I call BS.
Yeah, that would be the most vicious, like, dudes tricked into playing strip poker, but it turns out they just have to strip old furniture.
Yeah, for, like, super entitled white women who think that they deserve that job to be done for them for free and are kind of pissed that it's taking so long.
But, like, they'll dress kind of sexy and, like, kind of be flirty. So, like, the guy's like, okay, I've seen enough porn to think I know where this is going. And then they just leave without a tip. They're chased out by dogs.
All right, article number one. The genes from a culturally extinct Native American group from eastern Canada were discovered in a man from Tennessee. Damien, is this science or bad science?
This is bad science. It was not Tennessee. It was Tallahassee. And because this man was from Florida, the other tribes in eastern Canada are not claiming this man.
Yeah, they're like, no, I know that, like, this might end up getting rid of our cultural affiliation to all the things that we have. Like, this might get us kicked off our reserves and whatnot, but we do not want anything to do with that piece of shit down there.
Woo, good thing. I can't be in Tallahassee legally anymore. I was looking, things were heating up. The Gator Mafia was coming for me. Oh, it's too cold for them up there in Canada. What y'all doing up here?
It turns out that it's actually illegal in this county, in this country, in America, to cover a dog in lighter fluid and set it on fire while it's inside of a movie theater.
Apparently, in America, you cannot kidnap an elected official and waterboard him with Mountain Dew.
By the way, waterboarding with somebody with Mountain Dew is just giving them Mountain Dew to drink instead of water.
Oh, man. I just want a game right now. What's happening? This is freaking awesome.
Man, all I want to do is ride a motorcycle without a helmet and not take care of my kids. Ah!
Your wife comes in. Damien, what did you do, Bobby? You just got a dirt bike.
You just got a dirt bike and a used katana on eBay.
Okay, the katana, I don't know. But the dirt bike, I have something to do with.
Sorry to Damien, this is actually science. And really quite surprising. So this refers to the Beothuk people of Newfoundland. And we were pretty sure that they died out completely around 200 years ago. Their culture died out. Basically, they were on the eastern edge of the country over in Newfoundland. And so as things got occupied in the 1500s, they just got pushed off their land. And they got pushed to shitty places. This was back when the colonists' idea was like, all Indians are the same. There's Indians here and Indians over there. So we could take these ones and move them over there and they'll be fine. As opposed to thinking like, no, the ones here fish and like do stuff like that. And that's how their culture works. And if we just send them up to the mountains, they're probably going to die because they're not going to be able to make a living up there. So they did that to the Beothuk. And essentially the entire population died. I think in 1829 or something like that was the last one that we knew of to be Beothuk who died of tuberculosis. And we thought their culture certainly died out. We thought all their genetics died out. One researcher wanted to see. So he found some ancient Beothuk skeletons, did genetic analysis of them, and then started looking for genetic markers from people in genealogy databases, like 23andMe and Ancestry and stuff. In doing that, he found one guy who had unmodified Beothuk mitochondrial DNA. And so
he was the guy who sold out the tribe. He was the ancestor of the guy.
Yeah, right.
Like, yeah, you could have all of our land for like, I don't know. What, how much Molson you got?
They found out who this guy was. They went and contacted him. And this guy had no idea he even had any Native American or Canadian or anything in him. He had no concept. And he
shot three scientists who wandered onto his property.
He essentially has an unmodified Beothuk MT genome, which is crazy. And it's really neat that ended up surviving. That probably means there are more people like this out there because, you know, if you think of the amount of people who have actually participated in a genealogy website versus the people on Earth, there's a lot more people on Earth. And so there's probably a lot of these weird little genetic islands out there where people or groups we thought were completely extinct still have some members or some genetics floating around in the general population. Really, really interesting stuff. I hope that we find more stuff like this about the tribes of North America, because I think one of the greatest losses to human history was what happened after Columbian contact, where we now look back and we're just like, oh yeah, Native Americans, they're all running around. There were nation states forming. There were huge empires that formed and collapsed in the time that the Native Americans were here. Things got taken over and language groups dominated and then wilted away. Genetic groups dominated and wilted away. There's a huge history to the Americas. And we lost a lot of that when colonialism happened because we essentially just pushed them all away and killed them all and said, fuck it, and who cares, and destroyed the sites.
Well, the good thing is that stopped.
Right. Now we treat them like kings. But this type of genetic information might be able to help us trace the histories of people that are now lost to the actual historical record itself. There's nothing written down, but we can trace it because we can find the genetic remnants in these people, figure out what their history is, where they got those genes from, and then trace it back to these people we didn't know were part of that group and kind of tell a bigger and broader story. I always think those stories are really, really neat. Article number two, researchers working with Labradors have determined a new calculation for a dog's equivalent age that appears to be more accurate. Damien, is this science or bad science?
This is science, and it was really surprising when I read the article. Researchers had it right. It's 1 year for every 7 years, roughly. But all dogs age backwards like Benjamin Button.
Oh, really? So wait, so then puppies start off really old?
Yes.
Then how come as a dog ages, it gets slower and more infirmed with worse health problems?
God. You know, he works in mysterious ways.
And does this also mean that all dogs have, like, an inevitable form of SIDS, where they get to the point of being an infant and then die?
Oh, it's even more than that, because they're actually dragged from heaven and they go to hell. So, like, dogs are in heaven, where they all go.
What, yes, you know, all dogs go to heaven.
All dogs start in heaven.
Before being brutally tortured into hell?
Yes. The first dog, the Adam dog, ate God's cat, and he's kind of been taking it out on the species pretty well since.
Wow. You know what's funny? You know what that means? It means out of all the major religions, Muslims got it right.
You lie with dog.
Indeed, Damien, this one is science. So in this case, they used a combination of a few different factors, including the kind of base rate of their aging. Like, this always bothered me when I heard the 7 year thing, because they'd be like, oh, your dog's a year old. It's 7 years old. And it's like, this dog had puppies 2 months ago. Like, do a lot of 5-year-olds have babies? Like, that doesn't seem right. This doesn't seem equivalent.
Oh, well, depends where you're from. If you're from Tallahassee, you know, I mean, my grandmother gave birth to me at 7. I mean, come on. And truth be told,
she was considered an old spinster.
My grandpappy, who was 14, didn't think he could marry her off. But fortunately, the mayor of Tallahassee had legally murdered his 20-year-old wife and was looking for a new one.
He stood his ground and murdered his wife.
To be fair, she was talking back. So they use the methylation of the genome as one of their main points of analysis as well. So we talked about this in epigenetics and how eventually things can be methyl groups can be added and kind of change the way certain genes are expressed. That can cause certain issues with aging. It can also change the way our genetics interact with the environment. What they found is basically they found a better way to calculate a dog's age. Now, the new equivalent is like your human age equivalent is like... So here's what they say in the actual article. Let me try and explain it. Human age equals 16 and dog age plus 31. Now, that's not actually hard and true rule because the fact of the matter is, in this case, there's not going to be a standard equation. What they've essentially done is done a graph that will show you the equivalent because it starts up much faster. Obviously, we just talked about the first year of a dog's life is actually much longer than 7 years for a human. In fact, what they say is the first year of a dog's life when they get to 1 year old is about 30, the equivalent of 30 in human years. And then from then on, the amount that they age slows down relative to our own. So it's not like every year is 30 years for them. Obviously, otherwise all dogs would die after like 2.5 years, right? But that aging slows down. And so if you have like a 6-year-old Labrador, it's like the equivalent of like a 60-year-old man. But they can live on average to 12, right? And we don't live to 120. So that kind of peters out. Those years get closer and closer to our own until near the end. And then we kind of intersect where humans are around 70 years old to a Labrador's around 12 years old. These will vary with different dogs, obviously. We know that different dogs have different lifespans and they can be dramatically different. If you look at like a Great Dane and like a Spaniel, they live very different lifespans. Big dogs tend to not live too long because of all the issues that they have. But in general, this new calculation is really interesting because it'll allow us to tell the better equivalent of the human age of our dogs. You might go, well, what's the purpose of that? The purpose is understanding things like when you need to take them to a vet, how far you can push them, whether or not it's okay to leave them, to like take them running on a hot day with,
when
you know,
can marry them.
Yeah, when you're allowed to marry them. Again, different in Tennessee. But all very, very interesting. All right, article number 3. New research indicates that climate change is causing the rapid extinction of the North American beaver. Damien, this is science. We're bad science.
This is bad science. The North American beaver is already extinct.
Well, this is bad science, Damien, but it's the opposite. It is not extinct. It's actually causing a huge beaver explosion, which also great porn title. The warming. So like
it is. That is a great porn title. I'd watch that. I already want to see it.
North American beaver explosion?
That's a squirt porn, if I've ever heard. That's
so the warming areas of Alaska have greatly expanded the beaver's range, and they've moved into previous tundra regions that were super outside of their normal climate zone. This is all in the last 2 decades. They've exploded in certain areas of Alaska during that time, and we're able to see it because beavers are one of those unique animals that fuck up their environment almost as bad as we do, or at least change their environment, by creating dams that turn little rivers or streams into ponds or lakes. They literally transform a landscape. So we can use satellite imagery to track beaver dams over time just based on, you know, those lakes and ponds forming. So in 2002, over an area that's about 100 square miles that they're looking at, they had 2 beaver dams. By 2019, 98 beaver dams. So this is a 5,000% increase. That we think there's about 5 of those being constructed every year. And oddly enough, the dams themselves, while exploding on their own because of climate change, can actually cause climate change, or at least help contribute to it. Because when you flood those areas that are otherwise Arctic tundra with permafrost, meaning there's frozen ground underneath holding in CO2 and all this other stuff, as the water envelops over those areas, it basically keeps them from ever forming permafrost. It releases CO2 and methane into the atmosphere. And those things, those ponds and lakes, they keep the areas from freezing over as much as they do when they're just this little stream going through. And so that essentially warms that area locally as well. So not only is the beaver explosion seemingly caused by climate change, but beavers seem to be causing it too. Climate change is great for beavers, heating up and stuff. And so I have this theory that, like, if you ever looked at an Exxon board meeting, there'd just be like four beavers in suits going, good, good.
Yes, we're great at building dams, but we're even better at engineering mass extinction events. More wood, please.
All right, and lastly, article number 4, a new study into a series of underwater caves that have led to some of the oldest skeletons in the Western Hemisphere indicate that the 10-plus ancient bodies found there were likely individuals participating in an ancient red ochre mining activity, sometimes venturing 900 meters deep into a series of tunnels looking for a great spot to dig out ochre. Damien, is this science or bad science?
This is science, and this is a throwback to a day where if you wanted to be an art kid, you had to be tough. You had to be a badass to be an art kid. You couldn't
That's
dance
true.
Your way down into that 900 pitch.
I'll buy that. So, like, in order just to get your art supplies, this was the equivalent of having to, like, walk through the main streets of Compton to go to the art supply store, only it was a cave 10,000 years ago pre-electricity that you were wandering into.
Gotcha. And instead of rival gangs, it's rocks waiting to break your bones if you fall more than 2 feet.
And angry giant ground sloths.
Yeah. Walking on rocks barefoot as an adult, mm-hmm. I'm like, this sucks so hard. Climbing down 900 meters.
Yeah.
How many broken feet do we find if I'm a paleontologist?
I mean, I'm sure there are a few, but walking around hard rocks is like one of those things where your feet just get tougher when you do it, and you like eventually have very tough feet and you can kind of do it, assuming they're not like sharp or volcanic or something, but like you can kind of just walk around. This is limestone cave, so I don't think imagine it's very sharp. The more impressive thing is just if you think of how you would manage that. I mean, you're going through passageways and caves beyond the first, maybe you have sunlight at 10 meters, maybe. But for the other 890 meters, there is not an ounce of sunlight coming in there. So, like, think of dealing with that 10,000 years ago. So, again, this is science, and this is very, very cool. These skeletons are from the Yucatan Peninsula. We've talked about that before. Some of the oldest human remains from places like Tulum, Mexico, and stuff in the entire Western Hemisphere, somewhere between 10 to 12,000 years ago, found that that was the case as well. So, this cave network that we found. Again, I think we found 10-plus individuals who are 10,000 or more years old, and we might have a few dozen of those individuals in the entire Western Hemisphere, all of North and South America, and like 10 or more of them are in this one cave. So it's a pretty important place, and this used to be not underwater. This just used to be a regular cave. Since sea level has risen so dramatically since that point, it is now underwater, and we have to go in literally with scuba gear. So as
trained dolphins.
Yeah, so as the archaeologists are swimming around down there, we've noticed these 10 bodies before. They've been studied extensively, and they're looking for what's going on. Why are these people going down there? They believe it was red ochre, which is this ochre is essentially this chalky type pigment substance, kind of like what you would think of if you imagine the monkey making a line on Simba's forehead. Like, it's that. It's also It was used by a lot of native groups, not just in North America, but even in places like Australia for cave paintings. It was also used by people in North America for everything from sunscreen to tanning hides to adorning their bodies. And that is what we think was the most popular use, to basically draw and do art and everything on your own body. So it was
I thought you used a belt to tan hide.
That's only if you're from Tallahassee. So it was pretty important for the cultural use, but it was hard to get to. And what we found is almost 400 separate little mining pits throughout the cave network that are all little red ochre deposits where they're digging up their ochre. They're coming in with essentially torches to try and go super deep into these caves, which is, by the way, one of the reasons we have 10 bodies ranging over that time period, because people fucking died trying to do this. It was probably some kind of rite of passage. It was probably a big deal. And there was certainly some kind of oral history of the people who went in and never came out. Those people seemed to die nearby.
If you want to make it into the ancient Rhode Island School of Design, you must travel into this pit and
bring back the most vibrant of red ochre. Do you understand, initiate?
They found, like, direction markers throughout the cave where they would, like, break off stalagmites or stalactites and use them as direction markers to go in and out. But imagine this. So imagine you go in there. Let's say you're not at the very end. Let's say you're a couple hundred meters in, right? You have not seen sunlight in an hour. Your torch is burning up. You find a spot that looks good. You start digging. As you're digging out this red ochre, all of a sudden your flame goes out. The second that flame goes out, if somebody doesn't come get you, you're dead. There's no way to find your way back in pitch blackness through a cave network, especially one that you're by definition not super familiar with. You haven't been down there a lot. So that flame going out, you would die. And that's probably what happened to those 10 and probably many more individuals is they would go down in there, they'd get lost, the flame would go out, something would happen, and they would die. And so we found their remains. But now we think we know what they're doing. We know that from the pits and the kind of direction markers that they use. They even would break off some of these stalactites and stalagmites to use to dig out the pits to get at the ochre. And it's all really easily datable because, again, they're bringing in burning materials, which leaves charcoal. And a lot of times this charcoal is deposited right near these ochre outcrops or near the bodies themselves of those individuals. So we got a bunch of C14 dates back. They're all at that 10 to 12,000 year period. This was clearly a really important place that had some kind of importance to the ceremonial life of the people that lived in that area, enough so that they were willing to do something that was literally deadly to go and get that ochre. And it's left a really unique archaeological site in the history of the world. We have this really, really neat place that for thousands of years, people would go to for something that was so important it would kill them and do something insanely dangerous. Something that to this day, with modern electricity and flashlights, would be dangerous. And they did it with fucking burning sticks. And they went in there and figured it out. It's just one of those amazing things where an archaeological site tells a story, not only of what happened to these people, but more broadly of the culture that they lived in.
That's why I only go to art stores where the employees try to kill me, because I need to feel that.
You want to feel alive?
Art is passion. And if I didn't survive this encounter to get my art supplies, I'm not honoring my ancestors.
That's also why you tend to stab hobos in the neck with paintbrushes.
Get away! Can I have some change, brother? Nobody takes my art. Art is my expression.
Okay, first of all, can you explain to us how, after making all of that money, Hulk Hogan became homeless?
I killed Hulk Hogan. Local hero kills Hulk Hogan.
Macho Man Randy Savage says, oh yeah.
Hey, let us remember Hulk Hogan wrote the N-word like drunkenly at a festival. You can Google it on like the side of a building, spray painted it. Which I know when you think Hulk Hogan, Terry Hulk Hogan, you think class and sophistication. Yeah. But turns out he has a racy past.
Yeah, I just think about the thermos stick from that video.
So did I win?
No, you actually very badly lost, but...
Really? Didn't I get three right?
Yeah. Yeah, but you need to get four right to win, so... you lost, and it wasn't even close.
Well, at least I caught that chicken.
All right, thank you, audience, for coming back for Science Faction 459, where you learned all about how genes from a culturally extinct native group ended up in a random dude from Tennessee, how we figured out a new way to gauge the age of dogs that is more accurate, how climate change is actually helping the North American beaver, and how we finally discovered what everybody was willing to die for 10,000 years ago in a cave in Mexico. Thank you so much for joining us, and come on back next week for Science Faction 460.
In local news, a misleading headline titled Beaver Explosion in Alaska has caused an influx of over 2,000 men into Anchorage, Alaska this morning, only to be severely disappointed.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.